Very good afternoon. And as mentioned, we are carrying on our study on the life of Joseph, a very wonderful young man, a man of great moral courage, great moral strength, a man whom 2 weeks ago we saw the blessings of God were always constantly with him. Wherever he was, whether he's at home, whether he's a prisoner, whether he's out there in the house of Potiphar, the Lord was with him and was evident to everyone around him. And so 2 weeks ago, we concentrated more on the character of Joseph himself, right? On how he's a good moral example and how through it, people are able to see God and how God blessed him in the midst of all this. But as we study the life of Joseph, we also would be able to see very evidently the perfect hand of God guiding him in his life. His story, the whole life story, not just this chapter before us, it's really a story of God's providence, perfect plan, God's perfect timings. And that is what we're going to focus on as we look through chapter 41 today, the mysteries of God's timing, of God's timing. You know, we all like to make plans in our lives, right? We like to have an idea at least of what we're going to do next year, in 2 years' time, or a five-year plan perhaps. We look ahead and we make all these choices based on what we assume is going to happen. Coming from school, we know, well, my education will finish within these number of years, and then I'm going to start work in this number of years' time, going to start a family, going to have children. Now, children are going to be this age at this year, and in that year, they'll be that age, and then, therefore, I can do this and do that. And we all have these projections. Nothing wrong to make plans. But what we must do is that we do not make it presumptuously, thinking that everything will always go in accordance to our own will. Because we know that seldom does it happen. Oftentimes, we are just following God's timetable. God is the one who has planned it all out for us. It's perfect. Sometimes it may go as how we expect it, but there will be other times where, you know, things will just happen and you never had it in your plan at all. How do we respond? How can we better understand and how can we better know what God's will for our lives are? We have to realize that above all, God has His plan and His purpose. And after we become a Christian, after we know that there is this sovereign, almighty God above us, then our lives no longer be what I want to do and my plans for the future, but it now becomes a day, a life in which we just wait upon the Lord. Instead of saying, as James told them, oh, you know, we're going to such and such a city to buy and sell get gain, we should rather listen to the rebuke of James that says, well, what is your life? It is even a vapor that appeareth for a while and then vanisheth away. For that he ought rather to say, if the Lord will, then we shall do this and do that. And that really ought to be the principle in which we live our lives, following the mysteries of God's timing. Now, the last time we saw Joseph, we left off at chapter 39. And at the end of chapter 39, he had really, by no fault of his own, found himself in prison. Of course, in prison is definitely not a comfortable place to be in. Nonetheless, in the process of his imprisonment, he proved himself to be faithful and he was, in a sense, kind of promoted even within that prison. And so he was now made to be a sort of an overseer of all the prisoners. That is what we saw at the end of chapter 39. In chapter 40, he continues on in prison. And there is one very interesting incident, and that is of the baker and the butler. It was referenced to just briefly as we read chapter 41. Now, what we know is that in the process of time, there were these two chief butler and bakers of Pharaoh, and both of them dreamed dreams. One of them, the interpretation was that he would be killed, he would be hanged, and that is exactly what happened. The other one is that in a few days' time, he will be restored to his position, and he will return to serve Pharaoh in his courts. Before we go into chapter 41, there is one interesting thing that I'd like to point out in chapter 41st. Look at verse 14. And as he told the butler that this is the interpretation that within 3 days, as in verse 13, Pharaoh shall lift up your head and restore thee unto the place, and thou shalt deliver Pharaoh's cup into his hand, after the former manner when thou wast his butler, then he made this simple request. He says, but think on me when I shall be well, and it shall be well with thee, and show kindness, I pray thee, unto me, and make mention of me unto Pharaoh, and bring me out of this house. You see, it was really not a comfortable place to be in. Later on, he'll describe it as the period of his affliction, when he named his son Ephraim, meaning to say that God has made me forget my affliction. But it was definitely a time of pain and trial, of torment even. I mean, nobody, I don't know if anyone here has ever experienced prison life. I have never, but you know, sometimes you read about it, you hear about it. It is not built or not meant to be a place that you will enjoy. Why? Because it's a place of punishment. And furthermore, he knows that he did nothing wrong, but yet he has to face this sort of restriction of freedom, this sort of discomforts. And certainly he didn't want to be there. And so he thought at that point of time that, you know, if I ask the butler to put in a good word for me, maybe I can expedite my release, hoping that, you know, God knows my situation. He knows that I've been unjustly punished. And surely I should have a way out. You know, as we mentioned 2 weeks ago, also the crime that he was accused of attempted rape. I mean, it is something that could really justify a death sentence, right? Especially that being the wife of Potiphar, not just a common woman, it was a woman of high rank. By God's mercy, he was spared, but he wouldn't have a sort of a sentence. They wouldn't say, oh, just 2 years or just 5 years and you'd be free to go. Probably he was there and he was there for life. That's why he thought, well, if I were to send someone to make intercession on Pharaoh on my behalf, maybe something good will happen. That was what he was trying to do. He was trying to influence his release. But you see, the thing about God's timing is that he cannot be influenced by man. God is in control. God knows exactly why he's in there in prison, and he has a purpose for him there, and there will be a specific fixed time in which he will definitely be released. I mean, this is God's timing. And so, when he told the butler, please, you know, put in a good word for me, right? This, in a sense, was him trying to take matters into his own hands. But what happened? You look down all the way to the last verse of chapter 40. And yet, did not the chief butler remember Joseph, but forget him. And so he was there hoping. Oh, the butler, okay, 3 days have passed and really, he was released. Oh, maybe now the butler can put in a good word and maybe he was hoping. He says, when will they come? When will the guards come and open my prison door, free me from the shackles and bring me up? Maybe he spent his time waiting with hope. With even a little glimmer of excitement, perhaps. Maybe today. Or maybe tomorrow. Or okay, maybe the butler, you know, he's busy getting back into the good books of Pharaoh. Maybe in 1 month's time, then he'll remember me and say, okay, maybe it didn't happen. Maybe I'll give him a few more weeks, right? Surely he has to remember me, right? Because after all, I'm the one that told him he'll be free. But it never happened. And for 2 years, he was there, stuck in prison. Thinking that there was hope, but slowly, hope probably was just gradually fading away. Of course, he never stopped being that good prisoner. He continued to be, you know, to serve well and having, you know, all the prisoners under him. But the hope of his release, daily, probably less and less. 1 year has passed. 1.5 years have passed. Well, probably the butler has completely forgotten about me. Or maybe the butler did mention me to Pharaoh, but Pharaoh chose not to release me. And he just kept on trying, you know, to go through all the possibilities in his mind. And after a while, he realized that probably freedom is not for me. And so we realized that, well, when we talk about God's timing, it is something that we cannot fix. We cannot change. We cannot try to take matters into our own hands because God knows exactly when is the appropriate and the right time for his release. God had a reason for why he would have to spend that 2 extra years, you may say, in prison. Already he had served a number of years. We don't know exactly how long. But it was God's will that he had to spend that amount of time in prison. And you may say now, from Joseph's perspective, if he did not trust in the providence of God, if he did not know about the directing hand of God. Now, from man's perspective, you may turn around and say, it was the butler's fault, right? I mean, he's to be blamed. How could he be so ungrateful? I mean, Joseph was the one that predicted his release, and now that he's been reinstated in his position, how could he forget? What sort of ingrate is he, right? I mean, the least he could do is to at least make a mention and then see what Pharaoh's will was. But he didn't even say a thing. And as you come to chapter 41, and of course, it's a very long chapter, we're not going to be able to read through every single verse. There's one particular thing that we want to look at in verse 9, right? From verse 1 to verse 8, it is about the dream that Pharaoh had, and of course he wanted to know what was the interpretation. And so he went to ask all the magicians, and none of him could tell, of course, right? Because what would they know? They were not any special people. They were not inspired by God, right? And so if the dream came from God, of course, man would not be able to interpret it. Now that's what we want to look at is verse 9. And so, after Pharaoh went around looking, who can give me the interpretation of the dream? Then, suddenly, the butler remembered. Verse 9, then spake the chief butler unto Pharaoh, saying, ah, I do remember my faults this day. And so, as I said earlier, from the human perspective, you may think, oh, the reason why Joseph could not come out earlier, oh, it's man's fault, right? It was the butler's fault. He hindered the process of Joseph's release. But again, we know that is not how God's timing works. It cannot be influenced by man in a positive way, but neither can it be hindered by man and his faults. Yes, I mean, from a human perspective, the butler was, in one sense, at fault. He didn't do his part. He promised, right, to let Pharaoh know about Joseph, but he never fulfilled his promise. And the butler realized it. And after 2 years, he says, Aya, my mistake. It is my mistake, right? I should have said earlier. I should have reported to you, Pharaoh, the moment I was released and told you about this young Hebrew man. Surely Joseph would have told him how unjustly he was treated. The fact that he never committed a crime, but yet he was there. The butler will also be able to vouch for his character. He says, truly, he is an honorable, a just man. And he was the one whom God used to tell me about my dream, and it really came to pass. But none of that happened. And so you may think, it's the butler's fault. Right, that's why he was in prison. That's why he had to stay those 2 more years. But again, that's not what God's timing is about. You see, God's timing, as we realize, will always happen in accordance to his plan, his timing, his will. Let's see what happens after this. And so it came to pass, this was God's timing, as we know, that the dream came to Pharaoh. It was at his will that this was the time now for things to be set in motion that will bring Joseph from being a prisoner all the way to become a prime minister. A very exciting story. All right, what happens? So, finally, after the butler spoke and said, it's true, it was my fault, and then he recounted very briefly what the incident was about how he and the baker both dreamt a dream, and one was freed and one was hanged. And then Pharaoh responded, verse 14. Then Pharaoh sent and called Joseph, and they brought him hastily out of the dungeon, and he shaved himself and changed his garment and came in unto Pharaoh. What a sudden change. He went from being a prisoner, suddenly he's brought before the presence of Pharaoh, the king, the emperor, one who was regarded almost as a demigod in the land of Egypt. That was the esteem that people in Egypt at that point of time had for their king. And from being that filthy in prison garments, having not shaved for probably the past few years, scraggy, dirty, suddenly he's ushered right before the presence of God. This can be none other explained by the fact that this was God's timing for him, God's will. An amazing transformation. I mean, we may have read this story again and again and again. And we know exactly what is going to happen, right? From the time that we start reading in Genesis 37, we know that one day he's going to be a prime minister. He's going to have that, you know, that whole conversation with his brothers back and forth, and then he's going to come out to be vindicated, right? But if you were in Joseph's shoes at that point of time, I mean, you would never expect these things to happen. You will never know. Every day you're just waiting, 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 saying, God, when will my release be? Because that's what you want. But you could never in the wildest dream expect suddenly, within one day, you'll be brought out of prison and then all these things will happen. An amazing transformation. But I realize that this is really God's plan and timing for him. And that is what we have to realize about our lives as well. Sometimes we have to go through situations that we really don't want to be in. Struggles, great trials, difficult, difficult periods of your life. And sometimes you're left questioning and wondering why. What did I do wrong, God? Why do you have to put me through this? Why is it that, you know, all these busyness comes all at the same time? And it is not just work, but it's compounded by problems that we face at home. And furthermore, there's pressure from here and there and all rounds. And then there is this still service that I have to render in church. It's not that I don't want to serve, but Lord, why? Why do you put me through this? Sometimes we're left wondering, and then we are tempted to take matters into our own hands as well. Like what Joseph tried to do. Now, of course, there was nothing wrong in the way that he did everything, right? Nothing wrong to make that request. But through it all, he had to have that continued trust in the Lord to say that, well, I have that desire to be free. And I'm sure he was praying to be freed. But at the same time, he has to continue to say, God is in control. God knows exactly when the date of my release will be the best time. And so I have to continue to trust in the Lord. He may turn around then and blame the butler. He says, it's your fault, you didn't say it, no. But you know that God's timing is not controlled by the mistakes or the errors of men. Sometimes in the midst of our busyness, in the midst of our trials, in the midst of our difficult situations, we just turn around and point fingers. Ah, it's the boss, like, he's so unreasonable, right? My children, my wife, my husband. And then you turn around, you blame everyone around you, and you think, you know, if it wasn't for all these people in my life, life would be so much better, right? So much more comfortable. And then you get so upset. You get irritated, you get angry. And you may even sever ties and lose relationships. Why? Because you cannot understand the control of God's timing. Realize that nothing happens by chance. Yes, it may be the mistake of man, his agitation, his problem that frustrates your purpose, right? Of no fault to yourself, you find yourself in this, you know, very, very difficult trial. And you think back and you think, well, it was just that one little thing. It could have changed everything and I wouldn't be in such a situation. But at the back of your mind, you must always remember that everything happens in God's hands. It is His purpose, His timing, His control. And so God's timing cannot be changed or influenced by my mistakes or even my well-doing, right? You can't think, oh, you know, because I've been serving God so much, so well, I've been such a humble, effective servant, I don't deserve going through all these difficult things. Joseph could have been tempted to think that way. I'm sure he didn't. He realized that God meant it unto good, because that's what you'll say much later on in his life. That Joseph, you know, Joseph would look at his brothers and say, yeah, you meant evil to me. It was your fault. Yeah, it was, you know, because of Pharaoh's wife, right? I mean, what a wicked woman. It's because of the butler, right? He didn't tell Pharaoh about me. His fault. And you could go a long list of people, you say, it's all because of all these people in my life, and therefore my life is so miserable. Or, you could look things from the perspective of God and say, well, He works perfectly in accordance to His will, in accordance to His timing. And so that is how we have to understand and regard the things that happen in our lives. And so what was God's plan? It is displayed, you know, almost magnificently in the next few verses. And so right after they brought him unto Pharaoh, he shaved himself, he changed his raiment, and so he was made slightly more presentable, and then he came in unto Pharaoh. And Pharaoh said unto Joseph, I have dreamed a dream, and there is none that can interpret it. Now I have heard say of thee that thou canst understand a dream to interpret it. Very wonderful response that Joseph gives in verse 16. And Joseph answered Pharaoh and said, it is not in me. God shall give Pharaoh an answer of peace. Now that was a very brave response from Joseph. I mean, you were just in prison. You were the lowest of the low. And then now you are brought behind in front of the highest man in the land at that point of time. And he is regarded as a god, as I said earlier, by his people. They worship him. Right? And he is already at a very agitated state. He dreamt a dream, and then he went around asking everyone. Nobody could give him an answer. And then now, as you know, Pharaoh speaks of highly of him and says, you know, they say you are interpreter of dreams. And then he gives this response. Oh, it's not me. It's my God. He dares speak the name of another deity in front of Pharaoh, in his palace, in his courts. But that was the courage of Joseph to always do the right thing no matter what. Because he trusted in God's timing, he trusted in God's plan. He knew that above all, he has to remain faithful amidst his adversity. I mean, he wouldn't know exactly what was going to happen after this, right? Because Pharaoh could very well take insult at what he said. He said, what is this God that you're talking about? Back into jail. Or worse still, off with his head. How dare he mention Elohim in front of me? That could have happened, but, well, we know that by the providence and the timing of God, that wasn't what was to become of him. But nonetheless, in the midst of all this, Joseph had to remain steadfast and firm on his beliefs, to always give an opportunity to testify of God, no matter where he finds himself. And so Pharaoh, I mean, I guess in his state of desperation, he said, well, if you claim that your God can do it, fine, and then I'll tell you my dream. Right? And so verse 17 onwards, he recounted the same story. He actually added a few more details, which you know, you can read off yourself in these verses. Right? He said, you know, the cow was fat, so fat, and the other one was so skinny. I've never seen any cow so skinny in my land all my life. It really goes to show that sort of extreme differences between the first set of cows and the second set of cows. And then after that, there was the seven stalks of corn, and then there were seven thin ones. And we all know the dream, right? And so finally, the interpretation comes. He gives it. It gives it from verse 25 onwards. And so the interpretation is this. Verse 25, and Joseph said unto Pharaoh, the dream of Pharaoh is one. God has showed Pharaoh what he's about to do. And so again, he brings the name of God in. All right? Never fearing the fact that it could be a huge offense, a grave crime to do so. But nonetheless, he says, well, what is happening to you, Pharaoh, is that my God is working in your mind. You know what the implication of such a statement is? Is that God has entered in your mind, into your subconscious, and changed your thinking, put all these thoughts and dreams and imaginations into your thinking, into your dreams. And of course, in those days, it was a very superstitious, mythical time in which everything seemed to have a sort of significance. And well, that was true for this particular case. God was definitely the one who was working in the mind of Pharaoh to help him to dream these dreams. And so that's what he told him. So, you know, what is happening here is that God is the one who will do all these things. And Pharaoh believed him. Pharaoh said, well, this is really a very vivid dream. It's unlike a dream, any other dream that I've ever dreamed before. It has to mean something. And so what he tells him is that, well, there are these 7 good years, and there are going to be these 7 years of famine. 7 good years and 7 years of famine. Now again, we have to stop and think for a while and say, why? Why are these things happening? I mean, why would God do this? And you realize that there is no explanation given. Joseph simply replies him and states, well, this is what's going to happen. All right, there will be these 7 years of plenty, such as you have never had such great years before. And that is represented by the 7 fat cows and the 7 stalks of corn, 7 fat stalks of corn. And then after that, there is going to be 7 years of famine. right? So 7 good years of great plenty. You're going to enjoy yourselves. It's going to be so great that you've never experienced such wonderful times in your history before. And then after that, it's going to be 7 terrible, terrible years, right? Verse 30. And there shall arise after them 7 years of famine, and all the plenty shall be forgotten in the land of Egypt, and a famine shall consume the land. And the plenty shall not be known in the land by reason of that famine following, for it shall be very grievous. You know, the thing about God's plan sometimes is that, you know, we cannot understand why He would do these things. That's another thing that we have to realize. Right? It cannot be influenced by man, can't be hindered by man, and neither can it be understood by man sometimes. I mean, what is the significance of 7 and 7? You ever think about that? I mean, wouldn't Pharaoh be left wondering, why would God do such a thing? Even Joseph, in the midst of this, he might be also wondering, now why is God doing this thing? Is God so fickle? Does God enjoy toying with His people in that way? You know, granting them so much and then suddenly taking everything away from them. And He says it's going to be so bad that in the midst of that second 7 years, right, when you start getting hungry, when you start to plow the lands and nothing seems to come forth, you scatter your seeds but the rains never come, your harvest fails year after year, it's going to be so tragic that they are going to completely forget about how wonderful and how great that time of plenty was. Now, for us, it's hard to imagine the sort of extreme situations that they will find themselves in, isn't it? I mean, we have just been experiencing year of plenty after plenty. And you may think, well, there were those times of financial crisis, right, in Singapore, just about 3 or 4 years ago, and then the other time in 97. Sometimes we look back at these incidences and we realize that, yeah, there was a stark contrast. Some of us might even have lost our jobs before. And sometimes in the midst of that, we wonder, why is God toying with me? Blessing me with so much and then suddenly taking it all away from me. And then returning it and then taking it away from me again. Why, God? And the people couldn't understand at the point of time. It was given as a prophecy, no doubt. But even Joseph, he didn't give a reason, did he? He didn't know. He just said, well, this is the thing that God is going to do. And verse 32 says it's going to happen very soon. Right? He says the dream was doubled. That means you had 2 different dreams and they were as one. They had the same interpretation. Why? It is because this thing is established by God. He's the one that's doing it. And God will shortly bring it to pass. It's going to happen very, very soon. But the question of why was not answered, neither was it offered. And they were left wondering, and we are left wondering as well. Of course, as we read further on, we know that it was all in accordance to His perfect plan. But in the meantime, we look and say, well, I don't know. And sometimes that's all the answer we can give. Of course, you may look back at your own life, and in retrospect, you can give an answer. You'll realize that, well, those times of plenty perhaps that I experienced in my life were times when I forgot God. And God had to bring me to my knees, to humble me, to remind me that I have to trust in Him. And that's what happened. And so therefore I had my years of leanness. And then I returned to the Lord and by His mercy and His grace He restored me. Perhaps we can say these things in retrospect. But oftentimes when things happen to us, when we are caught in the midst of all these trials and difficulties, what answer can we give? Sometimes all we can say is, well, we just trust in the Lord. We don't understand. Sometimes people will come to you for advice as well. And they will ask these very, very piercing questions. Why is God doing this to me? It's not that they forgot God. It's not that they deny God. No, they trust in God. And they know that God's providence is working. Right? They know, I know God is in control, but I just want to know why. Because sometimes we feel that if we know the reason, then that can help us tie through it better, right? We won't think that, oh, it's a wasted time, right? That the time, you know, why must I spend these 2 years out of a job? Why? I'm young, I'm healthy, I'm fit. It's not that I have no skills, I do. But why, Lord, why will you not bring me these things? Sometimes we wait and we wait and we try to do all the things right, but the expected thing doesn't come. And you say, Lord, Lord, you know my desire for a life partner. And how come that there's no one? Lord, am I not doing things right? Am I not serving? And the list of requests goes on. Good, legitimate requests. And we wonder, why do you work in this way, Lord? Why are these things happening in our lives? But that's what we have to realize sometimes, that in our position, from man's perspective, as we look at the situations right in front of us, there will be many times that we just simply have no answer. And that's all that we can say. People ask you, why is God allowing these things to happen? And you can just say, well, this is God's plan. Sometimes we cannot understand. We cannot understand why God will do such a thing. But above all, we must always remember that this is God's timing. It is a mystery to us, right? It's something that sometimes can't be explained. And even at the very end of our lives, sometimes we may still look back and wonder, why did these things happen? What was the purpose of it? Because a lot of times we can't see the big picture, the bigger picture. We only know what happens in our lives and in the lives of the people around us. But sometimes we may not realize how some events that happen in our lives have contributed to some other greater purpose or some other happening. We don't know, right? The impact that we bring about on this earth. We can never know, perhaps, until we reach heaven. And then God will reveal certain things to us. But in the meantime, it is just a journey of faith that we have to take. That, well, God is in control. I don't understand. I don't know why God will give 7 years. But then we read on. Our simple answer at this point of time may be, well, God arranged a dream so that Joseph could be prime minister. I mean, that's a good thing, isn't it? Sometimes you read through, and it's really very exciting, right? To see, you can say, the rise and the fall, and then the rise again of Joseph. I mean, we all like this sort of story with good endings, right? Happily ever after. As well, you know, he went from prisoner, and then what, we read the rest of all these things, suddenly he's exalted to such a high position. And so he just simply stated, well, the solution is that you must find a person wise, right? Find a person discreet and wise, verse 33, and set him over the land of Egypt. He says, let Pharaoh do this, and then let him take appoint officers over the land and take up the fifth part of the land of Egypt in the 7 plenteous years. And so he gave a sort of a solution. Okay, now that you know that these 7 years of plenty and famine are going to come, now this is what you should do, Pharaoh. Okay, you make sure that you appoint a responsible, wise person, and then he's going to administer, you know, all these things, right? You make sure you collect heavier taxes, so people won't mind, because they're facing such plenty, all right? Take 1/5, 20%, store it up, keep it, so that when the 7 years of famine come, you will have sufficient to provide for all the people. And that in itself is wonderful, isn't it? To know that 20% was sufficient to feed not just the whole land of Egypt, but to so many other nations in the surrounding region. That is how plenteous the plenty was. And so as he gave that advice, the Pharaoh's response was, well, logically, you should be the man. And so we see that, you know, you can say the most fast-track promotion ever, right? Going from that lowest rank in society, prisoner. And all the way up, he's made the second man in the country. Imagine that, prisoner, all the way to what they call the prime ministerial position, just under the king. And Pharaoh says, there is no one that is going to be second to you in this country. We talk about super scale, this is the most super ever, right? And so he says, well, I can see no other better man for this position than you, Joseph. And so I'm going to promote you. For as much as, this verse 39, for as much as God hath showed thee all this, there is none so discreet and wise as you, Joseph. You are the one of my choice. You shall be over my house, and according unto thy word shall all my people be ruled. Only in the throne will I be greater than thou. See how amazing that was? Only I will be above you, but everyone else, my whole nation, will bow down to you. Who are you? This young Hebrew slave. You're this young Hebrew servant who was recently a prisoner accused of rape. Imagine that. I mean, you never grows old, and you read this story again and again, and you just keep getting amazed by God's mighty hand. And then furthermore, you read on, more and more better things happen to him. And so he says, I shall set you over my house. Verse 41. See, I have set thee all over all the land of Egypt. And Pharaoh took off his ring from his hand and put it upon Joseph's hand. And that was really the symbol of authority. And he says, and I clothe you in vestures of fine linen and put gold chain about his neck. Now, this will be the second change of clothes that he has in that day. Right? He was wearing prisoner garments. And then he was put into slightly more decent clothes. And then he was now put on fine linen, the best in the land. You know, Egyptian silk, Egyptian cotton. That's supposed to have the highest thread count, right, of all the linen you can buy. Well, perhaps this was something like that, right? Very fine, comfortable, wonderful silk clothing. Fine linen. And then he went from having that shackles of iron around him. Now what he's had, he has a gold chain about his neck. Such an amazing transformation. Verse 43, and he made him to ride in a second chariot which he had. And they cried before him, bow the knee, bow the knee. Everyone, bow down before this foreigner, this despised Hebrew. Because you later read that, you know, actually Hebrews are what? An abomination to the people of Egypt. Right? That's why they had to be segmented out to the land of Goshen. They were not well-respected people. No, they were regarded as these despised, lower-class foreigners. That is the meaning of Hebrew. You're just a stranger, a foreigner. You don't even belong in this land that you dwell in. But yet now he's elevated to this highest position. And everyone in the land now bows down before him. And you know who is included in this everyone? His ex-boss, Pharaoh. Right? Pharaoh, the one, I mean, you would think that his previous position is not bad, right? He was the chief servant of Potiphar. Potiphar's household, not Pharaoh. Potiphar was amongst those that had to bow down to him. And that was the sort of rise that he had. And so as he rode in that second chariot behind him, all the people of the land, they will gather around and they say, oh, bow the knee before Joseph. Joseph. And Pharaoh said unto Joseph, I am Pharaoh, and without thee shall no man lift up his hand or foot in all the land of Egypt. That means even if they want to lift up the foot or lift up the hand, they have to take permission from you, Joseph. That is the amount of authority that I give to you. And Pharaoh called his name Zaphnath-Paaneah, and he gave him to wife Aseneth, the daughter of Potipharah, priest of On, and Joseph went out over all the land of Egypt. And Joseph was just how old? 30 years old, and he stood before Pharaoh, king of Egypt, and Joseph went out from the presence of Pharaoh and went out through all the land of Egypt. What an amazing transformation. And at this point of time, some of us, they stop and say, well, that is the story of God's timing, isn't it? It's a wonderful, wonderful story. It is a story of how God, through His providential grace, would raise a man from poverty to riches. And we all like that sort of story. And then we will use this to account of God's wonderful blessings. And then we will say, the same thing can happen to you. Right? If you are serving the Lord, if you are faithful, one day God is going to make you like Joseph. Can we make that sort of application? Because we know that's not always going to happen. We may read this story and say, oh, I want to be like Joseph. I'm going to be faithful. And then through your times of trial, you say, don't worry. Don't worry. One day I'm going to be freed from prison. I'm going to stand before Pharaoh. I'm going to put on these golden garments. And I'm going to be king. But that's not always going to happen. That is not the lesson that we ought to draw about God's timing from this passage. Because if we go away with that sort of hope, some of us are going to be sorely disappointed. Because not all of us are going to have the sort of rapid promotion that Joseph is going to have. Some of us may always just be in that state of difficulty. We may always have different trials to face. Now, we must not focus on just the physical promotion that Joseph is going through here. That's really not the point. But what we have to understand about God's timing is that He always has a plan and a purpose for this. Why was Joseph made prime minister? It was not for his benefit. We have to realize that. It's not so that he can be comfortable for the rest of his life, so that he can be proud about his position, so that he can show off. That is really not the point, and we must not go away with just that idea about God's timing in his life. Okay? That's not what we're trying to see here. What we do see from the rest of this passage is Joseph being wise in the administration, and exactly as what God says, it comes to pass. Right? He fulfills exactly what he planned out to do. So he says, well, 5 years, 7 years of plenty, we're going to raise the taxes to 20%, we're going to store up all the grain, and we will have sufficient. And so that's another thing that we can understand about God's timing, is that although there are many things that we don't know, we can't understand, we can't control, but yet whatever God does reveal to us, we can prepare for it. All right? We can prepare for it. And that is the aspect of human responsibility. That is what we want to see here. What Joseph is doing. He was placed in that position, true, but it was for a good reason, so that he can do something about it. That's what God wanted him to do. It's not to give him a prediction and then so he can just sit there and enjoy life, no. He had all these responsibilities to fulfill. And so from then on, he had to, you know, make sure that all things are set in place, not just in the capital, but he had to go throughout all the land to make sure that all things were in order so that the rest of the story can happen. Because it was only when Egypt had all these grains in store, then Jacob's sons will respond in that way. They will come, they will buy the grain, and the rest of God's plan can be fulfilled. But what we see here is the aspect of human responsibility. We don't know many things about God's timing, but there are a few things that are revealed to us. We know that God is coming soon. We know that one day God will return and this whole world will be judged. And in light of that, there are certain things that we can then do in preparation for it. We don't want, again, to go away from this thinking, well, after all, God is the one in control, right? I mean, it's God's timetable, it's His plan. And then I can't influence anything and I can't understand, well, then what's the point? I must as well just sit back and do nothing about my life because, well, God is in control. Sometimes we're left with that sort of fatalistic understanding about life. So, oh, we're just puppets on the string, right? God is the one playing. And it seems He's almost like toying with our lives. That's not the application. You see, there is an element in which we can do our part. Joseph did his part. He didn't just sit there and say, well, there's going to be the seven years, full stop, thank you, let's go back to prison. No. He gave that advice, and then he followed through with that advice. He says, well, let's prepare. Let's make sure that when the years of tribulation and trial come, we will not be taken by surprise, we'll be well prepared and equipped to face these things. And so he did it. And so he made all the preparation, and all the authority was given to him, he prepared for it, he fulfilled his human responsibility. And the result of this was, it was a success. It was a success. All right, and so there was the 7 years of plenty, and in the meantime, he was given two children. And the names of it really expressed the sentiments that he was facing. That, you know, he had times of toil and affliction, but yet the Lord caused him to forget, and the Lord caused him to be fruitful, right, in this land of affliction. And the 7 years, verse 53, of plenteousness, was in the land of Egypt, were ended. And then the 7 years of dearth began to come, according as Joseph had said. And dearth was in all lands, but in the land of Egypt there was bread. Not that there are lands continued to bring forth crop, but because their storehouses were full. And the result of this, everyone was desperate, and they all turned to Joseph. And he even increased in stature and power, isn't it? I mean, those seven plenteous years, people were just comfortable in their own lands, and they may even get a bit disgruntled, right? Why must we give so much to Pharaoh? Why must we give to Joseph? What authority does he have? But now then they realized, He is wise, and He alone controls all the food, not just in Egypt, but all the regions around. So slowly, Egypt began to have to buy from Him, and then all the lands will have to buy from Him as well. And this will really set the stage for the rest of the events in Joseph's life. Well, we will see that these are really the wonders of God's timing, because it all comes together for good. And that's the final thing that we have to realize about God's timing. It will always be perfect. It will always work together for good, for God's plan, for His people. It will always be perfect. God is never out of sync. He never misses a beat. He knows exactly when to put the seven good years in. He knows exactly when to have the 7 years of famine. He knows exactly when then to be able to bring Jacob and his family into the land of Egypt for His own purpose as well. Because through it all, there is this continual threat to know that God is always in control and nothing happens out of chance. It is always by His hand. And so we see that everything happens in according to plan. And verse 57, all countries came to Egypt to Joseph for to buy corn because that the famine was so sore in all the lands. And then when we come to chapter 42, we come back to Jacob's family and the other 11 brothers of Joseph. But through it all, we see that this is certainly in God's plan. He's always in control. And that's what we always have to remember every day of our lives. We don't blame the people around us. We don't even blame ourselves. We know that God is in control. Of course, we have to fulfill our own human responsibility. When we make mistakes, we repent, we move on. But ultimately, above all, it is God's plan, God's timing, and it is always perfect. Let's turn to the Lord in prayer. Our Father in heaven, we thank Thee for this glimpse and this look into the life of Joseph. And truly that through it all, we can see Thy hand, Thy providential hand upon his life. And although a lot of times we cannot understand what is happening in our lives and we do not know what Your plan for us is, help us always to remain faithful like Joseph, to always do our part to fulfill our responsibility and always trusting that You know what is best for us. We thank Thee for this time that we can study Thy Word. We pray also that Thou will guide us through the rest of this service, that we be able to continue to worship Thee in all that we do. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.